with you today, and I'm really excited to have you here.
Thank you.
Carla, I know it's very cold up there in Philadelphia. I was up there last week, and it seems like it's been in a deep freeze for quite a while.
It is, but once you've gone through 9-degree temperature, 19 is not so bad.
Well, that's a really positive viewpoint. So, would you like to tell us a little bit about your background? Did you grow up in Philadelphia, or where did you grow up? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, I did grow up in Philadelphia in the northwest section called Mount Airy. I grew up in the church, grew up in neighborhood schools, public schools, and I graduated from the University of Pennsylvania with a bachelor's in English literature, and I have a Master of Divinity degree from the Lutheran Seminary Urban Theological Institute, and I'm one class and a thesis away from a Master of Sacred Theology.
Wow, that's very impressive.
Well, thank you.
That's great. Well, tell us a little bit about what were the things in your life that made you become who you are today, want to become an activist and do the kind of work that you do.
Well, I watched my father predominantly. He was an activist and who worked within a community organization called East Mount Airy Neighbors. And I watched him demonstrate. I watched him close up bars. I watched him work for the betterment of his community. But he was also a griot. He told stories about Africa and about African people. And one thing that I heard very loudly through his words was his passion, his love for African people and for their freedom. So all throughout my life, for some reason, and probably because of my father, the words liberation, freedom, love, peace, harmony were words that I was drawn to through works and through music. Gil Scott-Heron was
yes.
one that greatly influenced me. And so did the Black Panthers.
Yes.
Those groups, people, influenced my thinking. And when I went to the University of Pennsylvania, I saw much racism.
Yes.
And also in the seminary, I saw much racism. And I thought, if there is any place where there should not be racism and discrimination, it should be in the seminary, a place where people should talk about harmony and peace and access and nonviolence should be the seminary. And I found it to be very much very different from that.
Yes. Well, first of all, I just, you know, your statements about your father are very moving. And that, just to go back on that for a minute, I mean, I think that, you know, that is a beautiful thing in the upbringing of any person. If you can become an adult and look to your parents as real mentors in the kind of life and true ethical stand, you know, not a false ethical stand, but a true ethical stand, which is, in my view, struggling for humanity as a whole, struggling to transform the conditions. So I think that's very moving about your father.
And my father also loved Marcus Garvey.
That is very interesting.
Throughout my upbringing, my father always told me that I was beautiful. And I'm a dark person, dark-skinned person, and my father was even darker. And he always said that black was beautiful, and that I was beautiful, and that our people were beautiful. And it's something that really touched my heart, and especially when I would go to churches and not see black people in the stained windows, and not see
yes.
the black Jesus, and not see even too many black ministers.
Yes.
And I thought, there's something wrong with this picture. Really couldn't put my fingers on it, but knew that there was something wrong with that picture.
Well, just, I mean, I think, I know that Marcus Garvey is one, I mean, I know one of the many, many things that he did was put forward the African Jesus.
Yeah.
And the images of that. I've read about that, and that was very controversial at the time, and it was very powerful. But of course, Jesus was from Africa. But let me ask you something. Your father probably would have been too young to have been actually a member of the Garvey movement.
That
am
is
I right?
Correct.
So was it then your grandfather who might have been a member of that, or was it just something that your father was aware of?
No, my father was aware of it. He was a learned man. And, of course, growing up in Georgia, he had to deal with much racism. Violence, I should say.
Right.
Racism is a euphemism. He had to deal with much violence and hatred in Georgia. So, I mean, he loved Marcus Garvey and Malcolm X, respected Dr. Martin Luther King. But he lived. Any person, African person, or any person of color who lives will experience all kinds of hatred from espoused by the government, by European Americans. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we live long enough, we will have to face it.
Well, yes. I mean, of course, this is one of the main questions that the African People's Solidarity takes on within the white community. And it, you know, of course, we take it on under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party. So it's in a strategic kind of way to present this, not just in personal experiences, but in the deeper systematic ways that this exists. You know, that, I mean, generally speaking, the whole white community has a very, very different relationship to the world as a whole than African people do in this country, in the world as a whole, and certainly in Philadelphia. And, of course, I've been to Philadelphia many times, and I see the conditions that tens of thousands, maybe more than a million African people live in Philadelphia. I mean, it's just overwhelming.
It is. And even yesterday, we had yet another police murder of an African man.
Wow.
He was shot in his back. He had just helped either a family member or a friend move in. And he was ringing the doorbell, and the police came up and shot him in the back, killed him. This happened yesterday.
That is, I know there were 20 African men shot last year, and this is the start for the new year.
Only 20 last year?
Well, we had
one on January the 1st of this year. The police said they found a gun on, he was part of people who were shooting, they found no gun on him. This continues to happen in Philadelphia, and I've had people on my show who are family members of those who were slain. My program is called Life, Love, and Liberation, and we talk about the violence perpetrated against African people in Philadelphia. It is horrendous.
Yes.
And we need to stand up and do something about it. The Uhuru movement or International People's Democratic Uhuru movement in Philadelphia is out on the street protesting, is meeting with families who have been caught in this struggle, caught in this life or death situation.
Yes.
In Philadelphia.
Yes, I know that. I mean, I know that the work of NPDOM, of the Uhuru movement in Philadelphia, is so urgent. And as you know, as many times as I'm there, it's almost as if another African was just killed.
Mm-hmm.
So often when we're there for events, it's, you know, and this is really part of our work as the Solidarity Committee, to bring this reality, to shake up white society and say, look around you, this is the price of our lifestyle. And so I think that, you know, I think that once anybody is opened up to this reality and recognizes for what is happening, just the wholesale slaughter of young men, of young African men, and those who are not slaughtered are sent to prison for things our children would not even be arrested for. So I think that is really important. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your radio show. It was very, I've had the honor of being on your show, and it's so dynamic, and it gets a lot of calls. I know the chairman, O'Malley Shatella, has been on it
several times.
And I think I feel that your questions are always very thoughtful, very deep, and I just really have appreciated it every time that I've heard it. So tell us a little bit more about it. How long have you been doing it, and what are some of the things, you know, more in depth of, that you're taking on your show?
Well, I started in July of 2005, so it's been over a year and a half. It's called Life, Love, and Liberation, and has everything to do with life, with African life, but also with the relationship between Africa, African people, and European people.
Good.
As well as others. I mean, we've had people on to talk about Australia, the Navajo people, Darfur. Well, of course, that's in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But also Venezuela.
That's exciting.
It's been a learning for me. Every time I have a guest on, I learn, which is part of the reason for my having started this. The real reason is I'm also a professor at the Center for Urban Theological Studies, and I've taught at the Lutheran Seminary as well. But there, and I've pastored a church, a European church, mind you.
Mm.
But there are things that when you are working for people, you cannot say. So there were things I found I could not say in the classroom setting, nor could I say in a church setting. So radio was the first best thing. I found that on radio we can talk about anything, I can say anything, and there is that freedom. And freedom is what I have been studying. So Life, Love, and Liberation, we talk about freedom and liberation and love. I've had people on, such as you, she said also Chairman O'Malley Shatella, but I've had Chimurenga Waller to come talk about the Liberty City 7 situation.
Yes.
I've had Diop Olugbala to talk about Sean Bell, the Sean Bell killing, but also Sibu Sisso Zaba, president of the Pan-Africanist Youth Congress of Azania.
Yes.
I've had Malkia Lydia, who is a documentary filmmaker who is working on a film regarding Chocolate City, D.C. I've had Jaffrey Kaidi on, who is an activist
from Haiti.
From Haiti. That was great.
Yes.
So we've talked about health and nutrition, violence, rape, reparations, gentrification. We've talked about beauty and the black image. I've had Peg Thatcher and Charlotte Harris on for who represent Project for the End of Rape. I've had a musician, Harold Smith. Just anyone who can enlighten us, transform us. I've had the Honorable Redmond Battle on from UNIA, and he also was one of the co-writers of Journey of the Songhai People.
That is so exciting. Tell us how can people listen to your show? Is it online?
Yes, it is. I believe it is Word, W-U-R-D.
W-U-R-D.
Radio Philadelphia. It is, for those in this area, W-U-R-D 900 AM. And the show Life, Love, and Liberation is on every Monday night for a half an hour at 9 p.m.
At 9 p.m. on Mondays.
Yes.
And you said the website is...
I believe it is W-U-R-D Radio Philadelphia.
.com?
I think so. If you put in W-U-R-D Radio,
you'll
it will
find
come
it.
Up.
Okay. Yes. Okay, good. I hope that more people can listen to that, because it's such really interesting topics that you're talking about, and fabulous.
So we wanted
people.
To address critical issues and topics of interest to the African diaspora, and we deal with quality of life, the strength of love, the power of liberation for people who live under the systems of white racist ideology, imperialism, and neocolonialism in America, in American and world society.
Yes. Well, I think that, you know, it's also, as you're saying, in the context of the forward motion for real liberation, as you have in your show, you know, and that it's not, I don't know, I really appreciate the context that you're talking about. That's part of the growing struggle for the unification of African people around the world, and for Africa and all its resources to belong to African people is only just, you know. So it's not just an abstract discussion, and I think that's part of what makes it really dynamic.
Thank you.
I wanted to, I know you are a minister now. You said that you are a professor at a seminary, is that correct?
No, it's actually called Center for Urban Theological Studies.
I see.
And it does grant, quote unquote, secular degrees, such as, human resources, and other degrees. Mm-hmm. I teach Black culture, culture of racism, ministry to abused women, and have taught English 101, English Comp, Black women writers.
That's great.
Speech, so they try to use me in every way.
Great.
Which is great, and I love teaching.
And are you practicing as a minister at this time?
I am a pastor who does not, at this point, have a church. My practice is purely non-official right now. So whenever I find that there's someone to be visited, I will go and visit. I will pray, give communion, but no, on a very formal scale, no, I'm not practicing at this point.
Well, I think that one of the things to me that is very interesting and important for us to look at is the question of Christianity and the role that it has played in especially the Catholic Church, which I grew up in, just mm-hmm. to say, as a little parenthesis there, that in the role of the enslavement of African people and the role of colonialism in Africa, the genocide against the indigenous people. And just as I do more and more research on that, it is deep. And I think that, I just wanted to see if you could address that, because I think that's a really important question.
Well, the church has been a primary mover and shaker in slavery, by way of enslaving people, all kinds of people, from Africa or from China, from South America. The church has done, to use a very old term, a dastardly thing, has been cruel and barbaric, and has taken scripture to justify its barbarity. There is a book called Philemon, where...
Spell that.
P-H-I-L-E.
P-H-I-L-E, okay.
M-O-N.
Okay.
In which Paul is writing to the slave master regarding a slave who ran away and went to Paul and sat under Paul and learned about quote-unquote Christianity. Paul writes the slave master and says, well, I have this person here who was a slave, who is a slave, but now he's my brother in the work. And I'm writing you to tell you that he's here and that I'm sending him back and receive him. And it would be best for you to receive him as a brother in the work rather than as a slave. But it's your choice to do what you will. That verse was taken, or that book was taken to say, to justify slavery. Well, we can have them as brothers, but we can still have them as slaves, as Paul has said. There is other scripture that says, slaves obey your masters, which justifies, again, slavery.
But do you think that in the time, you know, I don't know if you've heard some of the presentations by Chairman O'Malley Shetello when he talks about Jesus as a revolutionary struggling against the colonialism of the Romans. And yes. I don't think that he was struggling for slavery. I mean, at that time, you know, could you just say something about that?
Well, I do agree with Chairman Ishitella that Jesus was a revolutionary fighting for African people, for oppressed people, for poor people against the Roman Empire. I fully agree with that. And that should he and that thinking should be the model of Christians everywhere, be they black or white. That is the liberation that we talk about. Now, in the 19th century, there are three things that I believe were responsible for slavery, for the perpetuation of slavery, and that gave white Americans and Europeans the authority to enslave, and they are manifest destiny, salvation by grace, and sovereign immunity. Manifest destiny, as we know, encouraged slavery or near slavery by Europeans who, in faith, believed that they had the divine right of rule over all creation, that it was God's plan for Europeans, and that their means of life, their prosperity, might be upon the backs of those they enslaved and oppressed. Manifest destiny was said to be God's call to greatness and to rule, and since people of color were created inferior, and we know that it was in the 19th century that that manifest destiny or that science became embedded with religion, science, social Darwinism, became embedded into American society. So since people of color, African people, were created inferior, that it was God-given and God-mandated for them to rule. The second thing is, that I think is very much misinterpreted, is salvation by grace. That allows for the forgiveness of sin by God without the need or the obligation for restitution, reparation, or repair of sin.
Mm-hmm.
Which means manifest destiny says I can just go out and conquer and do whatever I want because everybody else is created inferior.
Yes.
Salvation by grace says I don't need to have any remorse. I don't have to consider it. I don't have to atone for it, repair it, give restitution of it, because God says that if I just say to him, I'm sorry,
mm-hmm.
then I'm fine.
Right, so there's no social responsibility.
There's no social responsibility, and sovereign immunity is sacred political power. That gives force to manifest destiny and salvation by grace.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the government declares itself immune
mm-hmm.
for things that have happened, and people are responsible. So mm-hmm. in every way, governments and European people who are in those governments, through the church, don't need to repair what they have done.
Well, I know that in the past few years, some churches have had to recognize and at least make a statement of reparations.
Yes, they
and
do.
We're going to go to break right now, but I would like to talk about that when we get back.
Okay.
So we'll be back in a few minutes.
All right.
Thank you, Carla.
African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela's new book, One Africa, One Nation, is available now. In this historic collection, the chairman and representatives of the emerging African Socialist International explain why Africa and all its resources must be liberated and in the hands of African workers and peasants in Africa and everywhere. The chairman's new book, One Africa, One Nation, documents the process of building the African Socialist International, which is rapidly growing in countries throughout Africa and in the U.S., the Caribbean, and elsewhere around the world. For pictures of the chairman's recent book signing tour, and to order your copy of One Africa, One Nation, go to burningspearuhuru.com. That's www.burningspearuhuru.com.
Yes, we want to really encourage people to get a copy of Chairman O'Malley's book. It's an incredible book that's out in publication now. This is Sandy Thompson in the studio here with Penny Hess for White Solidarity with Black Power. And we also wanted to announce an event that's taking place here in St. Petersburg on tomorrow evening. We're having Penny is going to be with us tomorrow evening for any of the people listening who are in St. Petersburg. We're going to be doing an event at our Solidarity Center, which is located at 541 16th Street North at 6 p.m. That's Monday night, tomorrow night. It's a program called History from the Eyes of the Enslaved, and it's a multimedia presentation that Chairwoman Penny Hess has prepared that we saw a preview at our national conference last month. It's a phenomenal presentation going through the history of conquest and resistance in Africa, Asia, and around the world, and just a really, really informative and exciting presentation, kind of giving a vision for where the world is going when imperialism is overturned, and just the proud and incredible history of African and other colonized people in resisting conquest and what the world could look like in the future. So I want to really encourage people to come and participate in that event. Again, that's going to be 6 p.m. at 541 16th Street North. We also just want to take a moment while we're in break here to encourage people who are listening to become a subscriber to uhururadio.com. This is the only place where you can hear up-to-date news and analysis from the perspective of the African working class and the International African Revolution. And this radio station, which belongs to the African People's Socialist Party, needs money to operate. The interviews that you've heard, not only today with Carla Harris from Philadelphia, an excellent interview, but also from London, South Africa, Sierra Leone, Mexico. These interviews are conducted at this time over the telephone, so there is a monthly phone bill that must be paid. There is equipment that is needed. At this time, Uhuru Radio is struggling to equip reporters and news bureaus throughout the African world with portable MP3 players and equipment to be able to gather and upload news and interviews from around the world. And you can help make that vision a reality by becoming a subscriber. Go to the subscribe page on uhururadio.com, and for a minimum of $10 a month, you will have access to unlimited free downloads of the speeches, the broadcast and archived speeches of African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omalia Shetela that are on the Uhuru Radio site. You currently do have access to all the other programs, and we want to really encourage people, if you've missed any of the interviews so far with Carla Harris or any of the previous interviews conducted here on Uhuru Radio, you do have access to those archives at any time to go and download and listen at your convenience. If you missed the live broadcast of Omalia Shetela Speaks, which are some of the most profound and historic speeches that the chairman has made, you only have access to that as a subscriber, and we really want to encourage people to become a subscriber. You just go online, you do it with your credit or your debit card, and you sign up for whatever you can contribute. It doesn't have to be $10. It could be $20, $30, $40, $50. But at least if you at least subscribe at $10 a month, which will come off of your card each month, you will have unlimited access to be able to receive that as a podcast, go and download that manually whenever you want to be able to go and listen to the chairman. So I want to really encourage people to do that. So we're going to return now to our interview with Penny Hess is conducting with Carla Harris here on uhururadio.com.
Thank you, Sandy. And welcome back, Carla Harris. I just want to let our listeners know that Mrs. Harris is a dynamic radio talk show in Philadelphia at 900 a.m. Word Radio, 9 p.m. every Monday night. I've heard her shows. I've actually had the honor of being on her show once or twice, and it's a great show, and I really want to let people know about that. She is a minister, a professor, a member of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, and an activist who's participated in the struggle against Wachovia Bank for reparations in Philly, which I want to talk to you about in a minute. But we were just talking about the question of religion, of the way that some of the churches, and certainly the Catholic Church and other ones as well, played a role in genocide and slavery and colonialism in Africa and the Americas and around the world. And Carla was just talking to us a little bit about that. And I wanted to ask you, Carla, I have seen on the website of the World Conference Against Racism that was held in 2001 in Durban, South Africa, there were, I don't know if it's still on, but there were some beautiful statements by some of the churches, maybe the Methodist Church, around the role that the church had played in the enslavement of African people and the question of reparations. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because it seems to be a growing movement, hopefully, within some of the churches anyway.
Yes, I don't have information on the World Conference Against Racism, and I know that the Methodists and the Episcopalians have released statements. I would not be surprised if any of the Baptist denominations have done so. I know the Free Will, I'm an ordained Free Will Baptist church, and the Free Will Baptists were the only group that denounced slavery and kept their stand by not admitting anyone who practiced or benefited from slavery into their organization. I do want to say that lovely statements are lovely.
Yes.
And we have had wonderful statements. I mean, during the days of slavery, there were many people who issued and publicized great statements denouncing slavery and the barbarity of their own people who were involved in it. Yes. We had missionaries who, with explorers in Africa, went and messed up, for lack of a better term, the thinking, the life, the culture,
yes,
the daily lives of people in Africa. You just can't make lovely statements. You have to back it up with something. One
and
reason,
that's never been produced so far.
Yes, yes. And I think often churches feel that, or people who are in churches, feel that as long as they're doing missions work, that they are on the side of justice. And what I feel and think is that when you're doing missions work, you're just perpetuating the state of those to whom you minister.
It's a definite role of colonialism to go in and as a way of, after the people have been subdued, after their land has been stolen, their resources, and they've been basically enslaved, then to just take away the culture, take away their own worldview.
Yes, that is part of that white racist ideal, that if you are not white, then you are savage. When I went to Ghana this summer, I saw that. I saw beautiful churches alongside the very poorest of villages. And if you have enough money to erect a large edifice, and they're growing. I mean, in Philadelphia, we just had one that was erected. And the African pastor, or Negro pastor, hired European builders to work on that building. If you're not going to be a part of the solution, then you perpetuate the poverty. How many African builders could have benefited from participating in that building, in the erecting of that building?
Mm-hmm.
I think missionaries, first of all, I think that European missionaries should remain at home and minister to their own people.
Yes. Well, you know, and I know that just in some of the research that I've done, the role of the church in, for example, the genocide of 10 million Africans in Congo under King Leopold, the church played an active role in that. And that was also an attack that just cut off the hands of little children, of men and women, if they just wouldn't submit themselves to colonial rule. The church played a very big role in that, not the Catholic Church and others, missionaries, and all over Africa, South Africa, Zimbabwe, all of it. And when I look at the history of the United States and see that the Franciscan missionaries in California, which people go visit those missions, enslaved, they actually, those churches were concentration camps of the indigenous people, and under the patios and such are mass graves of indigenous people. It's just, it goes on and on and on. And I know that the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, is one of the wealthiest city-states, I guess you would call it, or entities in the world, because it has stolen so much wealth from Africa and the Americas, so much gold and silver, and just siphoned it into its own powers. And like you're saying, today they're going to Africa, they're going to the Americas more than ever, you know, just to try to get more and more people, you know, away from revolution, away from the understanding that the land is theirs and it's being perpetuated. I think, you know, I just wanted to say on the question of reparations from the churches, I think that the only thing that has forced that to happen has been the struggle of the people themselves. You know, the people, you know, confronting the churches with that.
Yeah.
And I think that is powerful. And I know I wanted to ask you as well about the, I heard you speak before about the Wachovia Bank struggle in Philadelphia. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, in June 1st, 2005, the CEO of Wachovia made a statement apologizing for his institution's role in the African slave trade. The Congressman W. Wilson Good Jr. here in Philadelphia put forth a bill requesting disclosure, and it came on the back of John Conyers' H.R. 40 bill. As a result of that bill, Wachovia made a disclosure of several of its predecessor organizations involved in the slave trade or having benefited from the slave trade. As a result,
what were some of those? Just sorry to interrupt you, but what were some of the predecessor organizations and corporations, etc.?
The one that comes to mind is the Bank of North America. That's one.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious about that because I don't remember. You know, what is the one in Connecticut, the Hartford Insurance is something we've heard of. Wachovia is not something that rings a bell. I just wondered how it exactly played the role.
Well, the Bank of North America, and then there were also other institutions through which it benefited. And the result of that was that in Cobra, Philadelphia, with the leadership of Arima Redazan, who's the co-chairman of the Case Against Wachovia Committee, did some research and found that there were many predecessor organizations. So since that time, in Cobra, Philadelphia has been in discussion with representatives of Wachovia Bank, and we've not gotten a good response. So
I thought they were forced to pay something.
Well, they said $10 million. I have information that says that they were going to pay $10 million.
I read something like that.
But in my area of Philadelphia, East Mount Airy, I found out, being part of another group, that Wachovia Bank had intended to give and did give over $100,000 to the Mount Airy Business Association. And while Wachovia Bank says we're not going to pay reparations, they said what we will do is give money to the community. Well, the community doesn't see those dollars.
No.
And in fact, those dollars were used to regentrify parts of West Mount Airy, East Mount Airy, and Germantown.
Typical what happens. When they say they're economic development for the African community, they mean economic development for white people to come in and push out and disperse the African community.
And that is exactly what happened. So I organized a protest last October protesting the not so much the opening of a condominium, but protesting the fact that Wachovia and the business association have partnershiped without the community. If you intend to give money to the community, the right thing to do is to partner with the community so the community has a say in how that money, those dollars, are spent. I went down to the zoning committee before I decided to demonstrate, and found that the business association and City Hall did some illegal stuff in order to have that condominium go up. So just to those who are listening, one way to find out the information is to go down to the zoning board, see what City Council approves, and act on it.
Mm-hmm.
Speak up about it, because there are some things that are not right going on regarding gentrification.
Oh, it's pretty ugly all around, and I know in West Philadelphia, University of Pennsylvania is playing a big role in that as well.
Absolutely.
Pushing the African community out, dispersing it, and giving white people an opportunity to become homeowners, and these houses are worth millions of dollars now. And, you know, it's all uplifting white people economically at the expense of the African community.
That is correct, and the same thing is happening and has been happening for many years in North Philadelphia with Temple University.
Yes, I am aware of that.
So there's a mass displacement of people to different areas. They're not given dollar for their homes, for their property, for their housing stock. They're not given, they're being placed in a worse condition.
Yes. I do want to ask you about the Reparations Tribunal in Berlin that's coming up in June. I think we have a call, though, and I want to come back to that. I think we have a caller.
Okay.
So hold on for 1 second.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. This is Janine. I'm calling out from African People's Solidarity Committee in Oakland. I'd like to just make a quick announcement about an event happening tomorrow on Wednesday.
Uhuru.
Great, Janine. Go ahead.
Uhuru. Yes. My name is Janine, and I'm calling from Oakland, California. I'm a member of the African People's Solidarity Committee here, and I wanted to let people know who might be listening from the San Francisco Bay Area. And we are doing an event on Wednesday, February 14th, from 7 o'clock to 9:30 p.m. at the Fellowship Hall. I'm going to put out the address. It's 390.
Janine?
Oh, I really apologize. Hi. If Janine is listening. I wanted to make sure we didn't lose another caller who was coming in and clicking over. I lost Janine. So Janine, please call back. We do have another caller on the line. So the caller who has just been connected, welcome to Uhuru Radio.
Do we have somebody?
Hello, caller?
Can't hear.
I apologize.
Okay. Penny?
Yes,
you're on the air.
Uhuru, this is Allie. I'm in the African People's Solidarity Committee in Philadelphia.
Hello, Allie.
Uhuru, Carla.
Hello.
Uhuru, Penny. I'm so, we're all at the Uhuru Solidarity Center in West Philly listening to your show, and just so appreciative of everything that you're putting out, the incredible analysis and all the work that you do in Philadelphia, Carla. It's just a tremendous role that you play, and I just wanted to appreciate that.
Thank you, Allie. Thank you for being on my show.
Yeah. That was great. And I just wanted to comment a little bit on what you're talking about, because we hadn't heard about another African man being murdered yesterday in Philadelphia, and that is so outrageous.
Yes.
It's so incredible that it's happening. Like you say, almost every day there's been... This must be the fifth or sixth this year alone.
Yes.
And, you know, like you said, I just wanted to say something in terms of the white community, because I live and work in University City, and we work throughout Philly in the white community trying to raise this struggle and raise awareness of what's going on, because what you're saying about the whole justification for colonial violence, for the terror against African people by the church or by... You know, the whole ideas in the white community justifying it. And right now, it's such a vicious situation, and we have to really take a stand about what's going on in Philadelphia, because people never say, well, it's the violence of gentrification, you know, the violence of police murder, the violence of police containment against the African community that we have to take a stand for, stand against. You know, people just say there's such a huge thing in Philadelphia and throughout the country, the African community is so violent, they do it to themselves. This is all the politicians are talking about, all the white community talks about. And I really want to call on white people
who are running for mayor in Philadelphia. Yeah. That's their main thing. And what I was reading when I was there was that was the only thing they were running on, was this attack on the African community.
Exactly. That is all they're talking about. It's all they're running on. You know, and meanwhile, there is complete immunity for state-sponsored violence against the African community. What about the terror of the poverty? You know,
right.
I mean, there's just nothing more violent than what's going on from the white community enjoying all the resources stolen, you know, the housing, everything stolen from African people. And I really want to call on any white people who are listening to this or who have access to this information to come out and join a Uhuru Solidarity Movement here in Philadelphia and take a stand around this. We meet every Thursday at the Uhuru Solidarity Center, which is at 3733 Lancaster Avenue in Powelton Village. And this is our chance to really, you know, stand up against these attacks on the African community and stand up for justice.
Can you put out your phone number and email?
Yeah, it's you can reach us at 215-387-0919. And, you know, participate in the work to take out this information into the white community and build the support for the African movement, for reparations and liberation here and all over the world. And this Thursday, we're actually going to be having a study at 7:30 on the whole question of reparations, African people's struggle for reparations and our role in that, and showing a powerful DVD put together by Burning Spear Productions on the reparations struggle.
Great. Thank you, Ali.
Yeah, thank you for the show. Uhura.
Oh, thanks, Ali.
Carla, is there any, I don't know if there was anything that you wanted to say about that.
Well, I'm glad that she brought up the different kinds of violence,
yes,
meted upon the African community, because the violence that the schools give us is poor education.
Yes.
We have harsher penalties for those who have been committed of crimes. We have violence through the drugs that are flooded into our communities, and just violence with our older senior citizens, our older citizens and our youth who can't afford the high gas bills.
Mm-hmm.
There was a family of four children and a mother that just died yesterday from their house burning up.
That happens so much in Philadelphia.
It happens all the time, and I bring it to my listeners as well. It happens all the time. The Public Utilities Commission, PGW, and City Hall are in cahoots.
Yes,
I should say, because nobody will take responsibility for the high gas bills.
Yes,
where every year families are just taken away because of not being able, either one, to heat their homes, or two, they're heating them illegally and dangerously.
Because they have no choice.
Because
the heating bill could be $300-$400 a
yes.
month for a little apartment.
Yes.
Yes, so, you know, I think that it is really powerful, you know, the struggle to raise these issues, to bring it out, and I do want to ask you really quickly, we're getting to the end of our show. I know that you are playing a role in the Tribunal for African People, for Reparations for African People in Berlin, Germany, that's going to be in June, that Chairman Omali Chatella is coordinating. And can you say a little bit about that?
Yes, I am the outreach coordinator. I will be working with others, of course, to get judges, witnesses, historians, economists together to quantify the damage, to give testimony on our need for reparations or the justification for reparations, and also the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement in Philadelphia will be having its own tribunal in March. I don't know the date. When
I think it's
going to
be March 17th.
March what?
March 17th, Saturday,
when
March
Chairman,
17th.
Omali Ishitella will be there as well. For those people who are interested in the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America, we meet every Tuesday, 1611 Cecil B. Moore Avenue at 6:30. The International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement meets here in Philadelphia every Wednesday at 7:30 at 503 South 52nd Street. And if you need to want to contact me, you can email me at cd, as in Diana, Harris at att.net.
That's cd Harris at att.net.
Yes.
We have to wind up our show. It's been really wonderful having you on, Carla Harris, and I just really appreciate it and your whole input and who you are. And thank you very, very much for being on our show today.
Thank you, Penny.
Uhuru.
Uhuru.
We do have one final caller. Jeanine, is that you calling back?
That's me.
Make your announcement quickly. I really apologize for disconnecting you.
That's okay. This is Jeanine from Oakland, California again. I just want to make sure anybody listening from the San Francisco Bay Area knows about an event happening this Wednesday, February 14th, from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. It's at a place called the Fellowship Hall in Oakland, 390 27th Street, and it's called Defend the Rights of the African Community to Organize for Justice and Liberation. It's co-sponsored by the Solidarity Movement and the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement of Oakland.
Thank you, Jeanine.
Thank you.
Uhuru. And we want to encourage people to tune in next week. We're going to have reports from the Rappaport Diamond Convention and the Day of Action in New York City, where a solidarity movement protested the Diamond Convention, held a magnificent event. So tune in next week for White Solidarity with Black Power. Uhuru.